agree or disagree.
In an attempt to get short-term economic gains and make ends meet, the austerity hit Europe is selling off its assets to China. Italy, Britain, Sweden, and recently France have become China's targets in Europe, with France selling a 308 million euro stake in a firm that manages Toulouse Airport to a Chinese group. The sale has already been criticized by politicians in France, which raises concerns whether the short-term economic gains will be more beneficial than the longer-term political implications. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Marina Joshi. To discuss the Chinese buying power and the European response to it, I have invited Vladimir Rodzinkovsky, who's head of research at North Capital, and Mark Thornton, an economist and a senior fellow at Ludwig von Mises Institute. Thank you so much, Mark, and thank you so much, Vladimir, for joining me to discuss this. And I'd like to get your thoughts on whether we should be alerted by the growing purchasing power of China when it comes to assets in Europe. Let's begin with you, Mark.
Well, first of all, I would say that this has been going on in China for a very long time. The Chinese, you know, are experiencing economic growth for several decades. They save an incredible money, and they've invested it in their own economy, but they've also invested it around the world. And they've turned their attention more recently to Europe because Europe is, stock prices are very high, and the Europeans are willing to sell off a lot of their assets at these high prices. So this is a trend that's existed for quite some time. It's just now turned its attention towards Europe and the assets of Europe.
Thank you. And Vladimir, what are your thoughts on this? Should there be concerns long-term?
Let's recall that China started buying into a peripheral Europe country debt back in the 2011, saying that China will make a full support for European debt instruments regardless of how badly was affected. For example, the Hellenic state, Greece, bonds, etc. At that time, it was invaluable support. So Europe should not be worried, should not be alarmed by the Chinese activity, because it's been a fruitful and basically a very mutually beneficial cooperation. Also, for a couple of years, Europe will need some foreign participation. It has to lure foreign investors, and those should not necessarily be overseas investors.
Okay, thanks for this, Vladimir. Well, let's now discuss this topic in a more detail. Of course, on the one hand, as both of you have noted, we live in a globalized world, so it shouldn't matter who buys from whom. But on the other hand, you know, when it comes to assets which are regarded as national assets, for example, this airport in Toulouse, then there are a lot of questions here. And also, another interesting thing about this particular deal is that that airport moves now from the public sector into a private sector. So that's why there are concerns in France about it. Mark, what are your thoughts on this one? How would you comment?
You're absolutely right. I mean, it's quite natural to be concerned that when China is investing in your own country and with public utilities, ports, airports, things like that, which China is very interested in controlling, you know, it's quite natural to be concerned about that, because while these assets are nominally in the private sector in China, there's also, of course, direct potential for government control over those assets, or political control, because the Chinese Communist Party ultimately has the say over everything in China. And there's no true private property in China as in most countries. The Chinese Communist Party can take over anything it wants. It can tell the provinces to do whatever they want. They can take property of individuals and farmers and so forth through eminent domain. And so while nominally these European assets may be in private control, ultimately they could be easily transferred via the political process or political pressure to do whatever the Chinese Communist Party wants.
How would that complicate things for Europeans, for example? Speaking in longer terms, what sort of concerns are there?
Generally speaking, the Chinese companies and the Chinese government wants peaceful economic cooperation. They want to have access to transportation facilities. They want access to natural resources and to foreign markets. So generally speaking, their aims, their purposes are legitimate and peaceful and so on and so forth. It's the problem becomes emerges when political problems come in to dominate decision making. So That's the only problem that I foresee is not the general proposition of what they're up to, but potentially what they might be up to.
All right, and let's turn to Vladimir now. So, Vladimir, do you agree that China is not your usual buyer here? I mean, in a globalized world, it's okay to buy and sell assets, but with China, it might be a little different.
I agree, because Chinese financial sector right now is still developing. It's in infancy, but it's rapidly growing, and China is getting more and more experience, getting close to the Western standards of due diligence, etc. But no one knows how much money Europe will need to invest into the new energy infrastructure, given the fact that the Southern Stream is not a given thing. Uncertainty about Ukraine, whether Ukraine will be requiring any more funds, and how urgent would be that investment.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of factors that have to be taken into consideration.
Yes.
But let's look at the situation in Europe. Is it really that bad that Europeans are ready to ignore the long-term concerns and the current situation actually forces them to be ready for sacrifices?
I think this situation reminds me a time a couple of decades ago in the United States when the Japanese were emerging as a world economic power. And they were buying some very key assets in the United States, you know, motion picture studios, Rockefeller Center, some iconic capital investments here in the United States. And they bought them at very high prices, as there was great times in Japan in the 1980s. And the Americans sold off those assets. And there was a lot of public concern over foreigners buying those iconic assets. But it turned out that we were selling those assets off at relatively high prices, and the Japanese ended up buying things that they later regretted that didn't really pay off for them. But the Japanese were so concerned about trying to invest all of their capital and to spread their capital around the globe, which was probably a good thought at the time.
Yeah.
The Chinese are doing the same thing.
Yeah, but the Chinese are buying those assets at a very low prices. I mean, it's very, very lucrative for them. I mean, it might seem like a lot of money for Europeans, but for the Chinese, it's not really that they are spending a lot here. So it's a different situation here, isn't it? I mean, some analysts even say that Europeans are selling off jewels for peanuts.
Exactly, but it's the concern over foreign investment and foreign investment from a new source. Americans aren't concerned about the British or the Dutch investing in the United States, but we were very concerned about the Japanese at the time, just as Europeans are rightly concerned about, you know, what will Chinese do to their iconic assets.
Okay, and at this point, they don't know, right?
No, they don't.
Why is it that they are agreeing to the deals? They are not really sure what they will bring them in the future, what sort of benefits, what sort of dividends they'll get from this. Is it all simply political? I mean, are they just under pressure from Brussels to impose austerity, to save more? And this is just something that they were forced to do and they didn't have any other alternative.
Yes, the Europeans are facing austerity. The economies are not growing. Their governments spend way too much money. Their taxes are too high. Their national debts are too high. So Europe's got some economic problems. And one of the things that everybody does, it's not just Europeans, it's Americans, it's other countries, it's state and local governments here, is that they have to consider privatization of public utilities.
Mm-hmm.
They did that in Britain. We did that in the United States. And so that's a common, although controversial for sure, measure, but it's one that ultimately does work in terms of reducing the burden of government. And, you know, every time they privatize a public asset, not only do you get money, but you tend to get a little bit more economic growth, and you also get tax revenues because those private entities now have to pay property taxes.
Yeah.
And
so, in other words,
taxes.
It all depends on how these assets will be managed in the future and whether we'll have smart management of these newly purchased by China assets. And that will, in fact, decide whether it was a beneficial deal or not for Europe. Now, Vladimir, I'd like to turn to you and get your thoughts. Do you think that it was an opportunistic buying on the part of China because European assets are so cheap? Or do you think the Chinese have a long-term strategy here? What do you think?
First of all, as I said, China expressly said that it is interested in Europe's prosperity back in 2011, right? I think China is diversifying. Gold is not a very straightforward asset right now. The investors have different opinions about gold. China wants, as far as I understand their intentions, they want to get diversified away from the bonds. So what can China do if gold is not straightforward asset and bonds is something they need to dilute? Obviously, they want to buy real assets and airports, things that are going to actually develop. So anything can happen. Something can get gold bankrupt. But obviously, they made a due diligence. They investigated it prior to making any investment. So I believe they make due diligence, their own manner due diligence, and buy into real assets which are going to yield no matter what it is. But it will bring them a constant stream of revenue, cash flow.
So basically what you're saying is that they have made a good investment here. But just going back to what Mark earlier said about Japanese investing in the States and buying, in fact, some of the assets which were considered national assets in the States earlier, in fact, decades ago. Mark, could there be a downside for China in buying up assets in Europe?
They've invested all over the globe, and some of those investments in Africa and in Central America have not panned out, or at least have not panned out so far.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, there's no golden touch that the Chinese have. I mean, they're generally been successful at a lot of endeavors that they've undertaken, but there's no golden touch that everything that they buy turns into a positive asset. And so they face the same risks as everybody else.
And Vladimir, what are your thoughts then on the position of the Chinese? How vulnerable or how strong, in fact, is it?
Investing in anything right now is a big risk, including in the dollar assets, including in the treasuries, including in things like that. It's a risk.
Well, but high-risk investments bring high returns. I mean, that's why they are high risk.
Absolutely. You have a near zero yield right now, thanks to the zero yield environment around the globe. Look at the European Central Bank. Look at Federal Reserve. At the Bank of Japan, everywhere we have a zero rate. And, you know, we live in a zero rate environment. And it's very difficult to find something which brings you at least like 5 or 10% a year. Since the portfolio investment does not deliver, people and countries need to look around and see other opportunities. It's very natural in a near zero environment.
Okay, but given the situation, I mean, there's so much uncertainty in the world, and we don't know what's going to happen with currencies and with oil prices and everything. All of these things affect the macroeconomic situation. But speaking of China, they should be aware of it all. Why is it that they are investing? Why is it that they're not afraid of those risks?
I think Vladimir touched on a big factor is that the value of the Chinese currency is relatively high, and the value of the euro is relatively low. And that puts the Chinese investor at a big advantage in terms of investing in the eurozone because their dollars go a lot further in terms of purchasing capital goods in Europe because the value of the euro is so low. And that's another thing that we had in common with the Japanese-U.S. experience is that the value of the yen was rising, the value of the dollar was falling. It made the purchasing of American assets by the Japanese very lucrative.
Okay, but let me ask you this question. How did it so happen that China has accumulated so much money? In other words, how is it that it has so many resources, and what contributed to its purchasing power?
Well, in terms of purchasing power parity, it's a very subtle thing. We cannot touch it, really make benefits from that factor. So I would concentrate over real streams of money. Anyway, I don't think China is very much concerned because they see their currency right now is more free float than it used to be 3 or 5 years ago. And I think China set up so-called currency swaps in the Southeast Asia region, and it definitely wants to expand that currency swaps.
Agree or disagree?
Hello and welcome back. You're tuned to Agree or Disagree. I'm Maureen Ajashi, and with my guest today, I'm discussing the Chinese buying power and the European response to it. I have on the phone line Vladimir Zhinkovsky, who is head of research at North Capital, and Mark Thornton, who's an economist and a senior fellow at Ludwig von Mises Institute. Well, for somebody who just joined us, I'd like to make a quick reminder of what we have been talking about here. And we have been talking about how it so happened that China has become a very powerful international buyer. And right now it's buying up European assets and such countries as Italy, Britain, Sweden, and recently France. They have become China's targets in Europe, and with France selling a 308 million euro stake in the firm that manages Toulouse Airport to a Chinese group. The sale has already been criticized by politicians in France, and it raises a lot of concerns among a lot of people whether the short-term economic gains in austerity hit Europe will be more beneficial than the longer-term political implications. And we have been discussing this today with my guest. We have touched upon briefly how China has accumulated so much power that it can now buy a lot of assets around the world, in fact, not just Europe. Mark, I'd like to get your thoughts here. What do you think are the contributing factors to Chinese global prominence as an international buyer?
Well, its investing power starts with the fact that the Chinese people save a great deal of their income. And so they have a huge saving base in China. And then on top of that, their central bank has been for many years expanding credit in the economy. So the economy is growing rapidly, or at least it has until now. Their savings rate has been one of the highest in the world. And their central banks and the banks of China have expanded credit. And so it's just the giant pool of savings that's leaking out across the globe. I mean, first they invested in China, but now they're investing in Canadian real estate. They're investing in forest land and agricultural land in Central America and Africa. They're investing in mining operations in Mongolia. They're investing everywhere. And it's just a burgeoning supply of money and wealth and savings. If you look at France, you've got individual Chinese who are buying high-end French wines. You've got them buying high-end French art. And now you've got the corporations who are buying high-end public utility-type assets in France. And so it's just a burgeoning story.
Does it mean that there's basically no stopping China now?
Oh, well, I think the Chinese will stop the Chinese. They've had political reforms. Uh-huh. The leadership of China has changed in the Communist Party. There's been purges. The economy is slowing down. They're invoking austerity in China. So I think the story itself is going to peter out just because this mercantilist policy that they've been using in China is winding down somewhat. And I think their economy is going to slow down. And they've invoking austerity. Yeah. And I think that's the end of it.
So that will affect their investment abroad, in other words, yeah?
Yes, I think that's right.
Okay. Looking at how fast now Chinese invest, it almost seems like they're in a hurry because, as Mark said, things can change internally in China and that will put a stop to the speed with which Chinese are, the rate with which Chinese are buying up assets in Europe. But does that mean that at this point there's no rival basically for China because China is buying up assets and the number of assets are limited? And if China buys up everything, then it means that there is no room for anybody else to kind of step in. What do you think?
Well, I tend to answer, I don't know, but I prefer to give you an example of not so distant past. When the Lehman Brothers collapse was proceeding with very long conversation with financial companies from Southeast Asia, particularly from Korea Development Bank, if you know what I mean. So basically, Korea Development Bank decided not to buy Lehman Brothers, and it was the last step before that story, which actually started the world financial crisis. And also, let's remember who was bailing out Morgan Stanley in that time. There was UFG, Japanese company, etc. So what I'm saying is that Southeast Asia capital is very active on the international arena because it was staying pretty much far away from epicenter of the world crisis process. Europe was heavily involved and integrated into overseas operations. Let's remember what happened in Ireland, for example, with the Irish banks, with British banks, Northern Rock, etc. And Japanese, Korean, and Chinese, naturally, banks and financial companies were immune, were safe from that. That is why they have a buying power right now. So I'm trying to imagine if there is any alternative, and I tend to say no. We can think about Australia, but Australia doesn't have any ambitions but in terms of buying European assets.
Why is that? Why not?
It's too far away.
Well, I mean, China, too, is away from Europe, you know, not very close, but still, nonetheless, you know, it's actively pursuing the opportunities there, investment opportunities.
Because Australia has been the major trading partner of China.
Mm-hmm.
Australia producing exactly the raw materials China needs in order to build infrastructure, to grow its cities, to make its population more urban. So these natural trading partners, as we say. So if Australia would be really interested to buy something, the first country which Australia would approach would be China itself. But China doesn't need someone at this point. Europe is too far away, and Australia doesn't know exactly what to do with it. Obviously, it can buy European bonds,
yeah.
German bonds, and I know they have a lot of European papers, but in terms of buying real assets, like airports, building businesses, it should be some synergy. But without this synergy, I don't think it would be expedient for Australians, for all this, to really get into the Europe amid one of the harshest depressions.
Well, Vladimir, I think you made a very interesting point here, looking at Australia as a potential competitor for China. But here we have geography being a crucial factor, and Australia is, in fact, indeed far away from everybody else. Now I'd like to turn to Mark. To what extent do you agree with what Vladimir said previously?
In terms of Australia, Australia has always been, since the very beginning, an importer of capital. Australia's always had plenty of land, but it's imported people and it's imported capital, just like for most of the history of the United States for the first several hundred years, we were importing people and importing capital. So China has just gotten to the point where with economic growth and the development that they've had and the savings that they've accumulated and the resources that they need, they decided to diversify their investments abroad in terms of land, in terms of natural resources, and in terms of transportation and facilities. So they've purchased rights to harbors and airports and things of that nature. And so that's the natural drive, I think, for China, is to get involved in those types of assets that it sees enhancing its ability. And they're going to be learning things from the French company itself, too. Mm-hmm. The French facilities and the European facilities, they're going to learn. They're going to have people who have training in universities.
Yes, there is a know-how, definitely, that both sides will be getting. And in that sense, might be advantageous, such a cooperation there. But you know what's interesting? A survey by the European Union Chamber of Commerce in China established that Chinese companies rated labor laws, human resource costs, immigration rules, and cultural differences in management style, so to speak, as the biggest obstacles to operating in the continent. And as an example, there was a project between China and Poland. They were supposed to build a road, and part of it had to be a tunnel connecting different parts of a town. And the Chinese couldn't go ahead with it because there were so many regulations in Poland. And in fact, building that tunnel would affect the natural habitat. So they had to scrap this deal and they had to stop the project even. You know, so there might be some obstacles that the Chinese did not foresee at this point, did not even anticipate. So we've got to consider that as well. But, you know, speaking of this particular deal with the airport and other future deals and the ones that are already concluded, my final question to both of you is, should Europeans be more selective in terms of who they sell to their assets, or should they let the market decide? Let's begin with Vladimir. What do you think, Vladimir, on this one?
Well, obviously, markets should decide. I always been a pro-market man and try to stick as much as I can to that theory. Although it's been greatly distorted over the course of the last year, so market rules. On the other hand, once again, I'm saying that it's extremely important right now for any country, any nation, not just China, to diversify from single asset investment policy, outline it. Single asset investment policy could lead to a potential catastrophe. So nobody knows what's going on, how soon it could happen. But obviously, I am very much worried that, asset valuation is heavily distorted right now.
Mm-hmm.
So diversifying is the right thing.
Okay.
You don't have to buy an airport in Europe. If you like, you can buy loot. For example, I read recently in CNN Money article that some rich people in the States buying some wood stocks. Whatever. If you like wood, you can buy wood stock. As to myself, I prefer gold, but I'm not imposing it to everyone.
Sure, sure,
if
absolutely.
If you like gold, buy gold.
Mark, what are your thoughts? What do you think? I mean, should Europeans be more selective here, or should they just put caution aside and just let the market decide?
Well, I agree with Vladimir that the market should decide. I also agree with Vladimir that asset prices are greatly distorted all around the planet, basically. And so I would be a seller of assets, and so I wouldn't necessarily urge a caution or restrictions on the Europeans. But, Marina, I think you touched on a very important point, is that the cultural and regulatory environments in China are completely different than they are in Europe and the United States. Europe has a very heavily regulated political sector. China does not.
Mm-hmm.
And the cultural differences of employer-employee relations all throughout the entire society are different. And so I would urge both parties to any decision regarding iconic assets in Europe is to proceed, but to proceed in a very open way so that both sides understand completely the deal that they're making, because the differences between China right now and Europe right now are very different, and it can lead to potential problems down the road.
That's right. So only time will tell what will happen. I hate this cliche, but, there is no other way of describing things at this point, because right now Europe is forced to sell off its assets in order to get some short-term gains economic and because of the austerity and other things there. But in the longer term, there might be more obstacles and problems that are connected with handling certain assets and managing all other things, including cultural ones. At this point, I'd like to thank both of you for being part of this program and discussing the Chinese buying power and the implications of this. I had on the phone line with me today from the States, Mark Thornton, an economist and a senior fellow at Ludwig von Mises Institute. And on the phone line from Moscow, we had Vladimir Rozhenkovsky, who's head of research at North Capital.
Thank you. Have a great
day. Thank you very much, both Mark and Vladimir, for your participation and your thoughts.
Thank you, Maria.
Well, that's it for me for now, except for one other small reminder here that you can drop me a line at radio.agreedisagree@gmail.com. That's radio.agreedisagree@gmail.com. Do let me know what you think of the show and perhaps share some of the suggestions as to what you'd like to hear us talk about in the future programs. Until then, bye-bye and take care.
Agree or disagree?